good afternoon, everybody, or I guess if you're on the West Coast, a good mid-morning to you all. This is the PGA DFS First Look Show for the WGC Match Play, but this week, it's a special week. It's actually a dual tournament one, so I guess we can call it the PGA DFS First Look for the Corrales as well, as we'll try and get in a conversation about both, but definitely going to be focusing on in the Match Play. But before we get into all that, want to, of course, thank our sponsor of the show, Monkey Knight Fight. Their player props-based contests are easy to play. They don't require the time commitment to worry about quadrants and optimal lineups. They don't worry about that this week. All you got to do at monkeyknifefight.com is head on over to there and choose which game you want to play, your contest type, and your buy-in. And even better, when you sign up with the promo code Osmo, you're going to get $50 first match deposit. So sign up today. Again, that's monkeyknifefight.com. And since we do have two tournaments to talk about this week, we're going to really focus on those. But we're going to go through our quick DFS review of last week. But before we go on that, I want to bring in my two analysts. Eric, you are back with us for the second week. Jeff, what do you think about that? We've got an actual partner here, huh?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's great. Always good to get the more perspectives and stuff like that. And yeah, especially this week, because like you said, there's lots to talk about, different formats. So kind of interested to know what Eric thinks about all this, because I usually suck at this event. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Figure out group two and move on. That's kind of where I'm at. The group of death. I kind of always love that FIFA idea. They always find that one group that's just absolutely stacked. Well, it jumps off the page this week. So excited to break it down. Just excited to also follow the bracket, because if you build lineups correctly, you're already at an edge.
Yeah, it's a great point. And if you guys followed my little Twitter conversation this morning, getting the final 4-4-4, not one lineup 2 years ago did. Not one. Now, 3 years ago, a couple of them did, and each of them finished in the top of the GPPs. So that is still the goal, to try and get all four. That's how we're going to build this week. We will certainly be talking about that as we move along. So what we're going to do, little change up, as I mentioned, we're just going to run quickly through my DFS review of last week. We go over some of our big-time performers. We go over the optimal lineup and such like that. So let's go ahead and kick it off with a little DFS review. Obviously, Matt Jones, from the get-go, looked like he was going to be a must-own. He ended up coming up to win after firing that first round 61, so a great score. Chase Seifert was up there, 14x value. CT Pan, who I wrote up a couple of times this week at 13. Sam Ryder, Denny McCarthy, Camilo Villegas, Aaron Wise, Kevin Chappell, all 12x. Couple of other names down there. As you can tell this week, when I have names like Chase Koepka, Stuart Sink, Roger Sloan throwing up an 11X. Eric, it is going to be a volatile one. We'll see what the optimal lineup. It was like 46,000. Just a tough week when stuff like this happens.
Yeah, I felt pretty good coming into it. Obviously, I was really high on Joaquin and Shane Lowry on the front end. And then all that exposure flooded from Berger to them, and I didn't really know what to do. So I kind of went massive overweight the field for the most part, and then kind of did a little bit of a scatter shot on the bottom end. Well, the problem with that, I guess, is when you have a guy that is reaching the highest ownership of his entire career in a tournament that's a smaller, like a lesser field event, just in terms of strength of the field, and he gets up to, you know, 15-20% owned in most stuff, and he hits, you're in a lot of trouble when you've got under 5% of him. It's just, there's nowhere to go from there.
So true, Jeff. You didn't, again, Matt Jones was so key last week. Any take it for you on that regard? I know you maybe focused a little bit more on the betting, but it was actually, when I look back at it, Monday morning quarterback, wasn't that outside of the grain play. I mean, he had been playing pretty good this year.
It really wasn't. You know, Matt Jones is a guy who's obviously won on the PGA before. And you know, when I was looking at this event and trying to bet it, you know, it just... this one worked out pretty much exactly how I thought it was going to do. It's always a weird event. We've seen weird winners here before. Not that Keith Mitchell is terrible or anything, but, you know, far back in the odds, you know, a similar type of winner here. So Matt Jones, I think, is someone that you could have easily got on if your strategy was kind of to tip to peg the 100-to-1 guys and just sort of throw a larger basket out there. It's something I wish I'd done a little bit more of last week. But yeah, definitely a guy I think you could have fallen on. You know, he was playing okay, but you know, just looking at the guys who were up there, it was a tough week for sure. If you went like heavy chalk or you tried to hit on one of the shorter odds players. So in a way it all worked out, the way I thought it would. But you know, I didn't have exposure to Matt Jones, unfortunately.
Now, Eric, one of the great things about Osmo.com when you become a Plus member is you get the projections from Alex Osmo Baker himself. And last week, had we just listened to Alex's projections a little bit more, we probably would have found ourselves to a lot more Matt Jones, as we're going to find out here during our pro review. Our guy, Alex, had a fantastic week, not just in the week long, but in the day long showdown stuff as well. So be sure, check those projections out. Just $8.95 for the week to join us on the golf side. But what do you make of that? I mean, should we get mad at ourselves given the fact that we have these projections in front of us? Me, it was an ownership thing. I decided to fade, but obviously shouldn't have.
Yeah, he's the number one player in the world for a reason. Looking at his exposures, I mean, you have Henley, you have Westwood. The Westwood part was the one thing that I would have had pushback on, but when it's only in a third of your lineups and then he's getting himself to a situation where he's getting on top of a couple of these other plays. Like, it's just, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one, but either way, I'm just enamored by like the fact that he is capable of kind of hitting on some of these plays every single week. He's just so consistent in terms of his builds, in terms of the way that he spreads his net. And I think that that's kind of the thing that I learned the most from.
Absolutely. And we're going to go over that here in just a little bit. The topside exposure is never too much. So just quickly running through the chalk of last week, we had just a one missed cut, couple of top 10. So by and large, the chalk did well. The secondary chalk, however, I would say those mid-tier guys, Fratelli, Wu, they all missed the cut. So it did bring the 6 of 6 percentage down pretty low. Running through the optimal real quick, Russell Henley, Brendan Steele with an incredible Sunday. Thought maybe he had a chance to win, but just stuttered a little bit down the stretch. Aaron Wise, Matt Jones, Danny McCarthy, and Chase Seifert. Wow, was your optimal crazy? Top GPP lineup, which edged out our guy by just 1 point. Had Russell Henley, Cam Tringale, the aforementioned Brendan Steele, Kevin Streelman, Matt Jones, and Danny McCarthy using $49,600 salary and a total ownership of 75%. Okay, now we're going to go into our quick pro review where Eric just gave us a nice little kind of tidway or tease into it. Alex Osmo Baker, he had Russell Henley, 46%, who ended up being a really good play this week. Lee Westwood, 35%. Doug Gim, 33%. Chris Kirk, 28%. Mackenzie Hughes, 25%. Zach Johnson, 23%. Matt Jones, there's the winner, 23%. Patton Kizzire, 22%. So, Jeff, we see Lee Westwood. We see Doug Gim taking up a third of his lineups. Yet it only takes one to win. I hate to say that every single week, but still interesting to see two of his main guys miss it there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Alex still had the right approach this week, even with the misses, obviously. I think going a little bit more of like a, you know, just avoiding that kind of mid-tier chalk, like guys like Matt Wallace, the guys basically I fell on this week. So, I like the approach, obviously. I think with Westwood and Gim, obviously trying to get overweight on the field, a little bit of sticker shock. I think he knew that the ownership was going to come in lower on those guys. Yep. and just going overweight, I think it made sense even with the guys who missed the cut. So definitely like his build out this week, obviously went with the projections of Matt Jones, Kizzire as well. And Taylor Gooch is a guy I liked as well. So really nothing to point out here. I just feel like he went with his projections this week, and obviously his projections are really good, and it kept him off some of those landmines. Like I said, like guys like Matt Walls, who, you know, kind of sucks. So
no, he sure did. And Eric, again, 46% was his top. The thing about having his top guy, Russell Henley, by and large hit. I mean, he was third in DraftKings points. I don't think he finished in third for the tournament. Didn't matter though after the amount of points he scored.
Yeah, he made his way into the optimal.
Exactly. So yeah, yep. I don't know why I didn't see that on the leaderboard. Sorry,
you're okay. You're just
Henley's your guy too, so I shouldn't have been taking that away from him, Eric. But go ahead, speak to the allocations a little bit and how he was able to get second place there using 99 golfers. That's his strategy though.
So I loved the idea of going to more golfers this week. That was a big part of what my strategy was. I capped out on Cruncher having $200 left over. Like, I was never going to zero out. It was difficult if you wanted to zero out your salary, but people do it every single week. So just avoiding that on a week where there were so many guys that could hit felt like an optimal way to go. And it looks like just from his exposures, it would have been tough for him to zero out a lot of these spots, except for some of the Westwood ones, I suppose. But with Henley making himself into the optimal 46%, that's just as good as hitting, you know, sometimes for the outright W, because the outright W, yeah, is going to be your path to a winning lineup. But your path to a profitable week is hitting on one of these guys that you're just Gun massively guys. Overweight to. And so having Henley up there, it made the Westwood not really matter that much, because you were looking at so many lineups where, because they were more on the expensive end a little bit, like you weren't going to have as much overlap there as possible. So like all those Henley lineups were pretty live coming down the stretch there. And then you get Matt Jones paired in that where he's overweight there as well. It's just a really smart way to spread your exposures. If you are going to be more top heavy, you know, like this week, I went the Joaquin Shane Lowry route, but you can kind of scattershot some of those bottom end guys because you are so heavily exposed to a certain play or a couple certain plays. And having that leverage that he had on Zach Johnson as well, who kind of got there in the mix, there were a couple people that just kind of hit for him out of this. Cameron Tringali was there on Sunday. I just really like this build in general. 99 golfers would normally be a lot on a regular field, but this one, because of how spread out it was, I really like that choice.
Now, I took a similar approach on the amount of ownership I gave to my top guy. However, it wasn't Russell Henley. It was Brandon Wu, who ended up missing the cut. So 46% of my lineups dead right away. I did match that up with 46% Sung J-M, who was a better play over Joaquin Neiman. That play ended up working out for me, but that was pretty much the only thing that worked out. Doug Gim, I also found myself a lot to. Dylan Fratelli, I bought into. JT Poston. A lot of those. So you see, basically four of my top five owned guys missed the cut. That is going to end up in a bad week. Maybe some decent hits. Not really, to be honest with you. I didn't have much. Chris Kirk was okay. I had a basic leverage on him. So we can keep on scrolling through. We'll go down to another one of a big time GPP players, good players as well. Forsaken at downside of me. Now they had not a great finish in the $15, but a fifth place finish in the $5. This was their same allocations, basically. Joaquin Neiman up top, Russell Henley next. So there you go. There's that name, 3 for 3 in the studs and in the pro review. And as I look quickly at Eric's as well, also had Russell Henley up in the top six zone. So I guess it wasn't too against the grain to find him, but Adam Scott, there was kind of the big outlier. He ended up having a pretty good week. A couple of other guys that he was big on, Keegan Bradley. Then moving to Eric, as we go on to our last pro review, we'll talk about Joaquin Neiman and Shane Lowry, 63% and 51%. You think it was too much for a field like this, Eric, if you had to go back and play Monday morning quarterback, given the fact that it's so wide open?
Yeah, I think coming off of last week where some of those guys were, you know, massively owned by the Millie Maker winner and kind of got a little bit cute in some spots. I just was so high on Joaquin Neiman, thought that with Berger out of the field, that it made sense to get double there. I didn't want to be at the field on a guy like him. It just didn't feel right. So it was kind of an all or nothing situation for both him and Lowry. I took the overweight approach. Lowry was fine. But God, it was kind of tough because I felt pretty good about my exposures going into it, but definitely Monday morning quarterback, looking back through it. I wish Henley, who we had talked about, just a guy who's from, you know, that Southern Georgia area, somebody who just has familiarity on this grass type. I wish that he was kind of the guy that I took more of an overweight approach to, but JT Poston being 3 under through 3 and then shooting 10 over the next 33 holes was not exactly what I was looking for. And so kind of planting my flag there. Ryan Moore, who hasn't really been around of late, but we kind of know profiles better on these shorter golf courses. I wish I could have done a couple of things different and spread it out even more than I did, but got to 88 golfers, a little bit larger than my normal allocation. I'm not going to beat myself up too bad, but it was a bad, bad week.
Jeff, another 2 seed goes down here in the NCAA tournament, but hopefully we're not going to have too many 2 seeds knock out of the match play championship, which we'll get to in a bit. But if I had to guess what you're going to say to this question, you would say those allocations from Eric were perfect. You and I talk about this a lot. You like going more aggressive, especially given the fact that Neiman and M, if we take those guys, maybe even Lowry, had a big time win equity, given the fact that Berger withdrew. So you think that it's a case for Eric just not maybe hitting the perfect plays there? Or would you say in an event like this, you would like to spread it out?
In an event like this, I could definitely see the spread it out approach. You know, more this would be like the one kind of event where It's just that the course brings in so much variance. You know, I think
Absolutely.
you made the right call on Neiman. I think it's a player it's okay going overweight on. But then you get down to players like Shane Lowry, and just doesn't feel as good, right? So, you know, I might have spread it out a little bit more. I think the Adam Scott call, you know, most of the big guys here had some exposure to Adam Scott, recognizing he was kind of going under-owned by the field. Hey, you might want to go a little bit more overweight on that or something. But yeah, other than that, this is still an approach I over the long term. I mean, look, you replaced Matt Jones and Ryan Moore. I mean, very similar type of players, similar price range. I mean, it's a completely different week, right? So, all things considered, not as far off as probably the profit and loss look this week. But yeah, it's easy to say, obviously.
I love doing shows with you. Thank you.
Yeah,
make me feel better. Talk me off the ledge. It's fine.
That's what we're here for. That's what we're here for.
Good.
If you guys aren't members of Osmo, then let me tell you a little bit about the free content we've got going on today. Both NBA and NHL rankings are free, so check them out. We've got a ton of sports going on. Obviously, the March Madness college basketball tournament in full swing. We've got NBA, NHL. We've got golf that is coming up to basically its biggest season, major season. So get access to all of the great Osmo Plus tools and content for nearly every DFS sport out there with an Osmo Plus weekly pass, just $29.95. That's going to include full access to all the premium content and tools on Osmo.com, including player projections, ownership projections, huge this week, and premium Slack channel. So much more. Only looking to play PGA DFS. Told you guys about it earlier, but just $8.95 for the week. So stop guessing, start winning, join Osmo Plus today. All right, let is go on to my lineup. I'm going to spend about 2 seconds on it because it was so bad. 3 of 6. I mentioned some of my top plays. Brandon Wu missing the cut. JT Poston missing the cut. Just not having it there, maybe not, and Luke List as well, all guys that I was high on. What happened was, and maybe I'm blaming this or I'm looking for something to blame, but they all got caught in the worst of the weather. There was a period of about an hour and a half where Matt Jones finished his round. The morning guys were still on the course, most of them at least, because Matt Jones was one of the first ones out, and they caught the worst of the weather, the worst of the winds, and all of my guys were in that little mini wave, and they all missed. Outside of them, Sung Jae Im, Brendan Steele, Will Gordon. I mean, Jeff, there we are again with Will Gordon getting us 10X. I'm okay with it, 7,100. Brendan Steele, great for me. Sung Jae Im was the right play on the studs. I was close if I could have found Matt Jones into the lineup.
Yeah, look, I mean, again, one of those weeks where, yeah, the waves definitely, we didn't even really talk about it, but it definitely had a little bit of effect, right? So Will Gordon, again, I was going to say off the top, great call there, 1.5% on. That's kind of you like to hit. Steele was a really solid play too. He's basically the only top play that I ended up with who did anything for me. Just a guy who just really grinds. You gotta love Brendan Steele. Never feels like he's out of it, so that's nice. But yeah, I mean, look, you took a shot with Brendan Wu. I mean, Brendan Wu's a talented player. Didn't work out when you go that overweight.
This week. Yeah, I'm doing it again this week. Why not?
Exactly. So.
Eric, same thing for you. I mean, I got caught in that mini bad wave. Did I make bad plays though? Like, are you going to sit there and tell me Wu was just too early?
No. Well, I wasn't on Wu because I just thought the ownership was going to get there in such a way for a pretty volatile player in a lot of ways, but everybody was volatile when you have these kind of conditions on this kind of a golf course with this kind of a field. So I didn't mind if you're going to play him there. 13.3%, that's no issue there. JT Poston, I bit the bullet there with you as well. Luke List, we know the kind of talent and upside he does have, does play better in some of these weaker field events. So I liked going to all of these plays in general. Will Gordon, somebody that I wasn't necessarily on, and I really do like the play in hindsight. Brendan Steele and him were obviously fantastic plays. Can't knock that. Wish I had gone more in that direction myself.
Yeah, he was kind of the chalk that hit. Okay, I'm done with Honda Classic for at least a year. Although Jack Nicklaus tells me it might be maybe shorter than a year. He's not very happy with the placement of timing. Jack normally gets his way with the PGA Tour, so I wouldn't be surprised to see the Honda Classic move next year. In case you're wondering, Jack Nicklaus, primary beneficiary, his charity is the primary beneficiary of the Honda Classic. So that's why he cares. But, all right, let's move on to the match play. Top 64 in the world are invited. How they did it was we had four or five guys withdraw. Gary Woodland was the only one due to illness. Then Adam Scott, Justin Rose, and of course, Tiger Woods and Brooks Koepka all not making the trip here to Austin. Looks like Brooks just got surgery this past week and he might be out through the Masters. He didn't specify, but it certainly looks like it. Can't imagine he'll recover from surgery in 3 weeks. Maybe he will. But let's talk about who's here. Playing Austin Country Club, par 71, 7,100 yards, another Peter Dye risk reward everywhere. We know that we have four different quadrants, and I'm going to pull them up. And we're going to talk about each group individually. Let's start off with group one, Dustin Johnson, Kevin Na, Robert McIntyre, and Adam Long. Kind of an interesting one there. Jeff, I'm going to let you get a crack at it. Is this the draw that we needed for DJ to get like 30% ownership this week?
Yeah, absolutely. It is, man. It's good. Look, and I like it. I like the fact DJ has an easy draw here. There's a couple ways I think you can go. I think Kevin Na is very live. Kevin Na is great putter, great die course player. He's live in this event. There's no doubt about it for me. And look, Adam Long can get red hot. So I don't have a problem taking either of those guys as underdogs here. DJ, a little bit out of form. Look, he's still DJ. He could come in and just blow the doors off here. But if he's going to get up there in ownership, like you said, I'll be taking underdogs from this group for sure. I probably won't take McIntyre. He is extremely talented, but I think I'd rather side with Na or Long here.
Yeah, and it seems like McIntyre may be struggling his first time around some of these courses that we've seen. API made the cut. TPC Sawgrass missed it, but I he's got great talent. Eric, pretty obvious that DJ, I like the fact that he came in the highest priced on DraftKings, which we'll get to obviously in a little bit, but I do like that given this draw.
Agreed. And former winner in 2017 of this event, like his profile for this golf course, again, just somebody that can, we know how hot he can get with a putter at times. Also just a phenomenal driver of the golf ball. So like going that direction. Kevin Na freaks me out a little bit because he feels like the kind of guy who can pop in match play events. Want to talk about a putter. He can just go flat out and win an event any given week. We saw that in Hawaii. Just gets super, super hot at unbelievable times. So I am scared of him in this draw. Robert McIntyre, just a young guy that hopefully can start turning it on here. Adam Long profiles well as well. But for the most part, I think this is one of the more top heavy groups that we have just in terms of like eating the chalk possibly and moving on. But Kevin Na is somebody that I'm probably going to have to sprinkle in a little bit still.
Yeah, I think the other two guys, I agree that Long and McIntyre maybe a little too far. Kevin Na, obviously the withdrawal at the Players, at least it was before Lock, I think this time was. I don't recall now, the Na, Ustase, and Day, they're always withdrawing on me now, so it's hard to keep up. The winner of Group 1 is going to play the winner of Group 16 that has Sung Jae Im, Victor Perez, Mark Leishman, and Russell Henley. First glance, you might say, this group is kind of weak, but Russell Henley is a D seed. Jeff, I mean, he's one of the stronger D seeds outside of Jordan Spieth, in my opinion, might be the strongest D seed.
And this is a great group for him, too. You know, you got Leishman in kind of meh form. You've got Perez. Perez is playing okay, and he's a good player, but, you know, he hasn't played this event a ton or anything. I don't think Victor Perez scares Russell Henley. And he's gained strokes putting in eight straight events. He gained eight strokes putting last week. He's still hitting his irons fine. Yeah, you're right. This is I love Russell Henley as an underdog. I'm definitely betting him to win this group. I do like Sung Jae Im out of this group too. And I look, potentially maybe get like outrights on both of them or something. And at least he got like two live guys coming out of the group. I don't know how to approach it quite yet, but I definitely like Henley as the underdog. Maybe having a little bit of exposure to Henley and Im, I think, is a way to go for me. But absolutely, Russ is on my radar. Love this draw from.
Yeah, my PowerPoint did not like Perez for some reason and switch it to Perez. It is P-E-R-E-Z. I apologize there, Eric, but I'm sure you know who I was talking about. Does he have the game to win at match play? Seems like he gets really hot and really cold.
Yeah, he's kind of that guy. He barely, I think it was like barely made the cut the other day at Sawgrass. So I'm pretty sure he's somebody who is in okay form for the most part. I don't know. This whole group just kind of feels muddled for me. So part of like why I love this event so much is just the ability to hedge ownership. So looking at what the ownership is going to be for these four, I feel like it's pretty diluted. Like Sung Jae Im and Henley would definitely stick out the most for me in this group. Leishman doesn't have a great record here, but I do like his profile in Austin. If the wind kicks up on any given day, a guy that I think can kind of just golf his ball pretty darn well and just kind of make it work. But definitely the other like everybody is live in this group. And so I generally take the approach of trying to go to the lowest owned of the group just because I think it's so tight between all four of them.
Yeah, and Perez, actually, the story on the made cut last week, he holed out a bunker shot on Saturday morning to get through, ended up making a big run on the weekend. So just a funny story about Victor Perez and making the cut there at TPC. Okay, let's head over to Group 8 and Group 9. That's who the winner of these two groups would play in their Elite 8 matchup. Group 8, let's start with them. Ty Hattently, Westwood, Sergio Garcia, Matt Wallace, all Ryder Cup contenders on the European side. So an interesting group. They said, at least WGC coordinator said that it was the Dell technology computer that picked these groups. But Jeff, I got to be honest, it certainly seems like a little bit of a play on here with these four groupings. Sergio Garcia, to me, is the standout here. Lee Westwood's played some great golf, saw regression. Ty Hatton, big events, hasn't showed up. Sergio Garcia certainly has.
Yeah, absolutely. Sergio, you know, advanced out of his pod at this event the last two times it's been played. Obviously has a massively long track record, played good at TPC Sawgrass. This is going to be a fun group. And I honestly think just you kind of got to just go to with Sergio probably as the best value. But like, does Westwood just bounce right back after a week off? Maybe now he's got some rest. Hatton is playing the best of this group, but you're right. I mean, does he show up now? It's a WGC and it's not like a semi-major. I think using Hatton might be interesting from DFS. He might just because everyone will just look at this group and go, I'll just use Sergio. So we'll have to see what the ownership on Hatton could be projected. I could see myself, you know, perhaps siding with him. He's a player who's bounced back pretty quick too from these bad miscuts. You're right though, like the majors and stuff, it's getting kind of old hat with Hatton. He just doesn't show up, so maybe bounces back here though.
Eric, Sergio fave for you, or do you believe in Hatton a little bit more than we do?
Everybody loved the fact that I knew where all the Sea Island guys were from. So I'm going to throw this out there too. Sergio Garcia, basically an Austin native. He's like living and residing in the area now. I don't know if he's able to sleep in his own bed. I'll have to figure out that. I'll get back to you guys on Twitter for that. But I'm pretty sure that just being from he's just there on the daily, probably played a little bit more golf there than most is my guess, but not positive. I just like being able to go with him in this event, in this grouping. I mean, he's got the most Ryder Cup experience bar none out of everybody. Well, him and Westwood together have a crazy amount of Ryder Cup experience, but yeah, Tyrrell Hatton for sure the chalk of the group, but I would be more inclined to fade him on the top end and go to somebody else down there. Everybody is super, super alive in that group. It's just kind of another one that, that feels like, you know, if Matt Wallace gets hot with the putter like he has been in recent weeks, sure, it could happen too.
It would be such a Matt Wallace thing to, you know, bomb last week and then just, like you said, like Eric said, get massively hot with his putter and just kill everyone in the group because he's going to be the lowest owned of this four for sure.
But that's match play too. That's the fun of this event. Absolutely. And that's the fun of it.
This event is so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, other than Kevin Kisner, who we'll get to, I mean, it's like everybody, anybody can pop anytime, but Kevin Kisner apparently is just like, he owns Austin Country Club now.
Lucas Beauregard is still probably living off of the third place money or fourth place money that he won a couple of years ago. We have
The Tiger beat down.
Yeah, that's right. He crushed Tiger that week. Group 9, who Group 8's winner we'll see, has two names at the top. Eric, I'll go right back to you. Paul Casey, Webb Simpson, tailor-made for match play, in my opinion. Just guys that don't make big mistakes. Guys, well, obviously on the Webb Simpson side, can make a putt from anywhere. Paul Casey probably not going to miss many greens. So does the winner of that matchup end up going on, or do you see one of these other two guys, say Mackenzie Hughes or Taylor Gooch, stealing it?
I might want to just eat the Paul Casey chalk here. So there's a European comp that exists. They have the Volvo over in Europe that's in I think it's Wentworth, but they have a match play event over in Europe, and he's finished up runner up twice in that event. So he's somebody who in match play generally kind of finds a little bit of extra form. I give him kind of a slight bump because of that. So I'm kind of going to be looking to go his direction there. Taylor Gooch has been somebody who played the last 2 weeks. This is, you know, another Pete Dye track like Sawgrass is, but it's a different golf course in a lot of ways. I think I'm going to be siding with the Casey side of it. This might be one of the pieces of chalk that I would be happy to eat.
Jeff, I think I agree here with what Eric is saying. Casey has retooled this game and joined the European Tour again just to get Ryder Cup standing so he can play again because he loves it so much. Now, this isn't a Ryder Cup, but it's as close as we get to it. Paul Casey on the top of your board, no matter his ownership this week?
Look, the only reason I'd be looking to fade Paul Casey is just the chalk gets so insane or something. And he's going to be popular. I mean, I will say that his price is under 9K. I don't think Webb Simpson scares a ton of people, even though he's obviously well set up for Pete Dye courses. Yep. But his track record, like in match play, just isn't that good, right? So, which is kind of surprising. But yeah, I think the only thing, reason I'd be against Casey is ownership. If I was going to look to this group for an underdog, I would probably side with Gooch for sure. Again, we just saw him play extremely well. We talked about him last week. So Gooch is slightly interesting. But yeah, like Eric, this will probably be one where I just close my eyes, put Paul Casey, and look for differentiation elsewhere.
Yeah, interesting to see what Casey's ownership comes out at. If that does, in fact, push Simpson down into, say, below 10%, I would be interested in putting both of them in, of course, different lineups, but in my lineup. So, of course, because it's a double week, we've got content coming out at all different times. In fact, we're going to be doing a true live before lock, Ben Raz and I, at 9 o'clock on Wednesday. But we've also got a bunch of short form videos, so make sure you're subscribing to our YouTube channel here if you're not already, to get notified when those come live. So, all right, let's move on to quadrant number two here, where we have got four more groups to chat about. And these ones are going to be who the final four matchup would be of groups 1, 8, 9, 16. Yes, I got it right here, which is going to be groups 4, 5, and two they're playing against, 13 and 12, if my NCAA numbers match up correctly here, which I believe they do. So let's go ahead and start with group number three, I believe. Group number four in quadrant two. It is Colin Morikawa, Billy Horschel, Max Homa, and JT Poston. Kind of an interesting group here. No guys that hit it long. All guys that maybe rely on a little bit of their short game. Colin Morikawa obviously relies on his approach game to get it done. All three of the other guys, though, none long. It's a really interesting grouping here. It's Colin Morikawa, obviously the clear favorite. But, Jeff, who would you say could dethrone Morikawa and move on from this group?
Yeah, I mean, look, just looking at the group right off the bat, I think Morikawa is going to be super popular this week, and it's for good reason. I mean, you know, we like the way Horschel's played lately, and Homa's obviously coming off a win. But are any of these guys like near the level of Morikawa? I think most people are just going to look at this group and go, no, not even close. So, you know, expect Morikawa to be chalk. I'm interested in Max Homa. This guy just has a lot of confidence. He's a solid player. He can ball strike it with the best as well. If that putter gets hot, the confidence is not going to be a problem with Max Homa. He's not going to go up against Colin Morikawa and be like, oh, I have no chance here. He's going out there with a chance to win. So Homa 100% for me would be the guy that I'd be wanting to target if I was going off Morikawa here.
I agree. Yeah. That's definitely, I think, the direction I want to go too, which is great to hear. I don't know. Colin Morikawa, hearing him, obviously he went out and won and made me feel stupid early a couple of weeks ago, but he doesn't look very comfortable with a putter at the moment. It feels a little wonky to me. You get in match play events and that intensifies a little bit because sure you does. Have those 5-6 footers to have holes. It's a different feeling in golf. Like having played a lot of match play events, having played in some USGA events, I can tell you just match play does a different thing to you, and you either kind of have it that day or you don't. And I'm just going to kind of like ride off of what I've seen of late. Like, yeah, he's going to go out and hit irons like a master, like he always does. But I don't know. I'm going to go the other direction just because I think putting is a stat that I try to intensify in an event like this.
You know, the thing about Morikawa is if I'm playing against him, watching him over the last year and a half, his only weakness, seriously, is his short putting. Inside of 5 feet, he's one of the worst on tour. If I'm playing against him, I'm not giving him a thing all week. Just it's just what I'm doing, and maybe that gets in his head, maybe it doesn't. But if he does end up winning, it's not going to get easier. In fact, it's going to get much harder as group 13, a very sneaky group, I think is very good. You got Victor Hovland, who says match play is his favorite format of golf. Abraham Anser, who we saw at the President's Cup play incredibly well. Then Bernd Wiesberger, who is just a guy from the European Tour that can get super hot. And Kevin Streelman, who puts together a lot of birdies in a row at times. So I think a good sneaky group here. Of course, I love Hovland. But Jeff, you think Abraham Anser can beat Hovland in a 1-1 and sneak through? Or you think Victor's playing too good right now?
This one's interesting. I looked at it and I've looked at it a couple times. And I think I'd probably just get – this is one where I'll side with Hovland. If I'm looking at Morikawa and Hovland – in this quadrant. I'm probably more likely to take the Hovland chalk. I'm just not sure if Abe is playing well enough right now where he wants to come in and can and do that. He's certainly capable, 100% capable. It's a die setup. I think it's a good course for Abraham Answer. I just don't know. I maybe I'm just not feeling it or anything, but like he hasn't really looked super, super great of late to me. I don't think this is one where I'd touch Weisberger or Streelman personally, though. So really, it does come down to Answer or Hovland. I think Answer will get some ownership for sure, because I think most people look at that group this week. But again, if we're talking Morikawa or Hovland, I'd rather take the Hovland to win over those two favorites.
Eric, I'm going to ask you one question, then a follow-up. Is Hovland the guy for you?
No.
Okay, well, then I can't ask my follow-up, really. My question was going to be, Morikawa at 10,400, if he's got to go up against Hovland or Answer in round two, I'm guessing it's going to be Answer, you're going to tell me. It seems like he's going to be probably pretty low-owned. I mean, that's part of the discussion here. Now you can tell me about Abraham Answer over Victor Hovland.
So we can't spend up at every single position going down the line, and that's kind of part of my thinking of this. And Hovland doesn't feel... with his recent form nearly as close. Answer has actually been pretty good of late. Back to consecutive top 22s in his previous two events. I like his pedigree and match play. We saw it at the President's Cup. That's the big thing that sticks out in my mind, was watching him in Australia. It seems like he changes and has like a different gear for match play, and he really kind of relishes it. I think the Tiger Woods beatdown that we all witnessed, that was worldwide witnessed, I think he comes out in a vengeance. He's one of the guys that I have circled to bet this week. I think Answer in match play, I think Answer in this spot is one of the sneakiest plays of the entire week, and I'm really, really going to be heavy on him.
Imagine if he wins his first event as a match play. Just we've seen something weird happen before, no doubt about it. As we switch over to the other side of this quadrant, Group 12 versus Group 5 will be the winners. Group 5, let's start down with them. Bryson DeChambeau at number 5. He's probably got to be one of the top seeds at this point. He does have maybe a little bit of a difficult draw with Tommy Fleetwood. However, Fleetwood really has not been in good form. Siwoo Kim out of it. Antoine Rosner, we have not seen him basically at all. So Bryson DeChambeau for me and Dustin Johnson on the other side are going to be the two highest owned plays of the slate, especially with Bryson only being 10,900. Eric, this is a tough one here.
I don't want to do it. I really don't. I am vehemently against. I've just been on the wrong side of Bryson for the last year, and it doesn't feel good. So I'm leaning on just jamming him in here. Not a great record of late in this event. He's only played in it, what, twice? But shoot, I don't really know any way not to, because the rest of this group is just so, so weak. I mean, I follow a lot of golf. Antoine Rosner is not somebody that I was very familiar with coming into this week. Tommy Fleetwood, not great form. Siwoo has been hot at times here, but the level that Bryson DeChambeau's been at, it's going to be very difficult for me, a guy who went to SMU, a guy who is, you know, familiar with Texas in general. I like going to him and eating the chalk this week. So take that for what you will. Of course, he's going to go 0-3 now.
Yeah, Jeff, it's very possible that he does. That's a great thing about match play. But when you look at the group above, say his, you know, Sweet 16 matchup, it really doesn't look that hard either. Finau's not playing great. You've got Kokrak, who's doing okay. Zalatoris not going to scare Bryson, that's for sure. And then Dylan Fratelli there as the fourth. It seems like Bryson is setting up to be one of the best plays.
So, I mean, I want Bryson to lose this group so badly. And it's just because I want to get a better number on him at Augusta in 2 weeks. He's playing so good. Last year we talked about, wait till Bryson gets his irons in shape. Well, his irons are in shape, and he's won and finished third at the Players. Like, these aren't even courses that are good for him. You know, like there's a ton of water. There's not open. Wait till he gets to Augusta. Like, just wait. So let's just pray he loses. I think Siwoo Kim, again, if you're going off the Bryson shot, absolutely, it's a Pete Dye course. Siwoo is crazy up and down, but you know, T9 at the Players. That's where I would go. I don't think Fleetwood's in good enough form to do this. To me, it's Bryson or Siwoo. But again, I'm just gonna, you know, like I said, pray for a Bryson loss here and smash him at whatever number he gets up to for the Masters, because he's playing that good.
Yeah, the only thing I know about Rosner is that he's got a last name that is probably closest to my name of any pro.
The only thing I know about Rosner is we're not going to be caring about him come, you know, Thursday because he'll be out. So.
No, yeah, for pretty much sure. And Mr.
Edit Ros- that clip and send it to him.
Yeah, if you are
if
watching
the group, you can absolutely do that.
So. Okay.
Group 12, we just mentioned Finau, Kokrak, Zalatoris, Fratelli, all kind of similar players in a way, all are not that great at putting, although Kokrak has had a great year putting. Zalatoris, for me, as a C seed, I'll call it, is probably one of my guys that I would say has the best chance to win as a C seed. Jeff, do you think Finau gets it done here, or is the form going to now regress because I played him a couple weeks ago?
This one's wide open, in my opinion. Group 12, I almost just want to play Fratelli just because he's going to be the cheapest, lowest owned, whatever. You know, obviously played terrible last week, but he played good at the Players, a really talented player. I'm pretty sure he's got like good experience here. Like, I think he got to not the semis, but like the quarters 1 year. So Fratelli's definitely live. Zalatoris is live. I think for this group, this is one where you can play any four of them, but again, if you're looking for value and just looking for a guy, a lower owned guy, like just play Zalatoris and Fratelli. And I just like the favorites in the other groups, but better. I mean, in this quadrant without a doubt. So.
Yeah. Now we have 13 minutes left as we get the NHL strategy show coming up right after us. We got some good matchups tonight going on subsequently to the college basketball tournament. So we'll go a little quickly. Eric, why don't you just give me your supposed winner of group 12 and your against the grain winner of group 12, and then we will move on to quadrant three.
Supposed winner, Will Zalatoris, under the radar Kokrak. Fratelli, I'm probably going to be staying away from, missed four of his last five cuts. Not in great form for somebody coming into this kind of an event. Finau, it feels strange to be off of him because if you just throw out the Players' Championship week, everybody would say that he would be like the odds-on favorite, massive, massive favorite in this spot. So if you can kind of just get over one blip on the radar on a golf course that he's never performed well at, that was Sawgrass, I think he would really pop off the page. But because Will Zalatoris is somebody that I think gives me a little bit of those savings, 7,900, I like getting to him a little bit more.
Quadrant three gives us group 7, 10, 2, and 15. I'm going to start in the bottom right of the page with group 15. And I'm going to tell you guys that the only group of all 16 that has any seed more expensive than the A seed is group 15. And it's not the A seed, it's the D seed. Jordan Spieth is coming in, what, $600 more expensive than Matt Fitzpatrick, who's the A seed. I think that probably leads to relatively low ownership, given the fact that he's got to play Justin Thomas's group winner or the group of death in the Sweet 16. So, Jeff, full fade for Jordan Spieth, or do you actually think he could be in a good against the grain spot this week?
I mean, I kind of like Jordan Spieth until I saw the draw, because I think this is the group of death, and B the price. You know, you got Connors playing extremely well, Matt Wolf. Is Matt
Wolf.
We have
no idea what he's going to give us.
Exactly. But I mean, you could get elite Matt Wolf, you could get terrible Matt Wolf. So who knows? And Fitzpatrick's playing really good. I mean, dude's top 12 in four straight events, the Players and stuff. So this is a tough group. Spieth as a low, low ownership play, sure. But my God, you got Reed, Cantlay, and Thomas coming out of the other quadrants, you know, potentially. So yeah, this is a tough one. I don't really want to pick anyone, but if I'm going to take someone, I'll side with Fitzpatrick. Just go with the chalk, I guess.
Yeah, Eric, 2 and 15, two groups that are just going to be so hard to get out of.
So out of any player who's played here in 10 plus matches, Matt Fitzpatrick has the worst win percentage at 4-8. So I'm just letting that be known. I had circled that as a, you know, you want to just throw out a couple stats here and there. That can be a little noisy because it depends on how well you're playing 50-50. You could just be flipping a coin 12 times and end up on the wrong side of it more times than not. So maybe a little noisy, but 4-8 out of anybody that's been here 10 plus matches. So I don't know. I feel like this is a very, very wide open group in a lot of ways. I know that you're a Spieth mark, so I'm curious to get your take there too. But Connors, we've seen the ball striking of late. Matt Wolf has been broken of late. Oh. Very, very difficult to get a gauge on him. George Gankus needs to get him to putt the ball as opposed to just like doing whatever else. He's just kind of been a little bit off here and there. But yeah, I could go any direction in this spot.
So for me on this group, Matt Wolf just had a story written about him on Golf Channel by Ryan Lavner, I believe it was, that basically chronicled his between the ears problem right now. The mental game is just not there, kind of feeling alone out on the PGA Tour right now. And that can really creep in. He's taken the last month or so off, has not played anywhere. I can't imagine coming back to play at Austin Country Club in the match play against an in-form Fitzpatrick, an in-form Corey Connors, and an in-form Jordan Spieth. It'll be that good to his ego or his mental capacity, but maybe it will. In any case,
guaranteed check. It's a guaranteed check.
No, that's true. It is a guaranteed check, and we do like those right now. So tough group. Don't get me wrong. I think low ownership on all of them because Connor, Spieth, Fitzpatrick, going to be tough to handicap. Another one that's going to be super tough to handicap, Justin Thomas has got to go up against Louis Oosthuizen, who's already tough, the defending champion, Kevin Kisner, and the defending runner-up in Matt Kuchar. Now, granted, Kuchar is in nowhere good as same form, but still got to be the toughest draw for that Justin Thomas could have possibly imagined, Jeff.
Yeah, it's pretty tough, right? Kisner is just such nails with the putting and stuff. And he's not even hitting the ball that well, but he still just sinks so many putts. In this kind of format, it is debilitating. It is backbreaking. And Justin Thomas is a guy who can get a little underconfident with his putter. And look, Usti is putting really well too. So like, this is a really tough matchup for Justin Thomas. I don't know if the crowd is just going to look at this and just be like, you know, we're going to get super low ownership on Justin Thomas. I still don't really want to play him, quite frankly. So, you know, again, coming off a big player's win, how much is that taken out of him? I think Usti and Kisner got to be the targets for me. I the more I look at this, I don't mind taking Usti if his ownership is going to be a little bit low and he doesn't get too crazy. He's played better than Kisner of late. Like I said, he's putting just as well as Kisner. He's got a ton of match play experience. You know, got reached to the finals here before. So I like Usti right now. But again, if he gets to be the chalk, this isn't really a group I want to be on the chalk either. So
even if Justin Thomas gets through, Eric, he's going to have to go through a Fitzpatrick, a Spieth, a Cantlay, and a Reed. So not only is he in the group of death, but I feel like he's got so much else going against him this week. Do you see him at least getting out of the group, or do you think it's going to be even too hard to do that?
I have no idea. This group is the one. So this is the group of death that I was alluding to use the World Cup terms. Kevin Kisner, best win percentage here, 14-5-1. Louis Oosthuizen, second best winning percentage at Austin Country Club, 13-6-0. Matt Kuchar, fourth, 10-3-4. Like, everybody is live in this group. So even just getting out of this group is an issue. So like Matt Kuchar, we've also seen multiple times at this event where guys who had terrible form coming in, it's just like a great course history. It's a great fit. It's a great feel around there. I could take some shots on Kuchar, as stupid as that sounds. He's been absolutely terrible of late, but when you don't have to post a score at the end of the day, when it's just straight up match play, Kuchar doesn't concede putts to anybody. So you know that you're getting the most value you possibly can out of him. He does not give two footers from watching him play previous years here. I kind of like him as a really low owned dart here that's going to get absolutely no love.
Yeah, it's certainly going to get no love at being in that group. Maybe a couple lineups in, given the fact that he's pretty close to min price because of that 6,700, I understand. Jeff, when we move on, as we got 7 minutes left, we want to give our opinions at least on all of the groups here and maybe give a one pick for Corrales if we have time. I don't know if we're going to. We're going to try our best, though. Group 7 and Group 10, Patrick Cantlay looks to be in a pretty good spot. I know Brian Harman's playing well. Jeff, but we got a missed cut from him at the Players, which moved his numbers up. So if we're going on the thesis that Cantlay is going to win a big event, we actually kind of like the missed cut from a couple of weeks ago, given that he had some rust being injured or being sick, whatever, right?
Love it. Love the missed cut. Love the setup on a die course. Got a great die record. You know, get all everyone jump off the Cantlay train. I'll risk him again here. He's got weak Hideki Matsuyama, never advanced out of the pod stage here. The only guy that scares me in his group is Brian Harman, who is absolutely a tough competitor. Made Ricky Fowler cry back in the day in match play in college. So Cantlay, Harman here for that group for me.
He made me cry too. So I was 15 years old, Columbia Country Club, US Junior Amateur. I had Brian Harman go out and just murder the field. It was absolutely insane. He was going at everything. He was banging putts. Like, they would go 10 feet by, but they would hit the hole every time. He's just kind of a match play guy that I think just kind of grinds and makes it work.
I think that Christian Bezuidenhout will be a pretty tough matchup for everybody, including Patrick Reed, Eric. You think he could get out of that group?
It's a tough group, too, it's now that we look at it, isn't it?
It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, you got Joaquin Neiman, who's playing pretty good, and Bubba Watson, who we know can get in your head in match play.
This is where you just kind of play the ownership game. There are like three or four groups out here where it's like, okay, I don't really know what to do with you. Like Reed is fantastic. Neiman hasn't missed a cut forever. Love him in general in a no cut event in a match play where he just kind of seems like a guy who will ball out. Bazuntite, I like going to here as well. And Bubba Watson has the best course history out of everybody. So good luck.
Yeah, seriously, and that's the best way to put it. Let's move on to quadrant four. We've got 4 minutes left, so I want to get at least a minute on each quadrant. My opinion, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, and John Rahm all have passed to the Elite Eight that, to me, seem rather easy. Rahm's going up against Ryan Palmer, his you know, teammate from the Zurich. Shane Lowry, okay, playing okay for him. Sebastian Munoz, no thank you. And then you look at group 14, who would be a Sweet 16 matchup. Daniel Berger, he's injured. Harris Inglis, no way. Brendan Todd, okay, maybe, but not against John Rahm. And Eric Van Rooyen, no way. Eric Van Rooyen will get knocked out on hole 15 because he makes way too many bogeys. Jeff, do you agree with me? Am I seeing something that's a little crazy, or does this seem right?
I mean, I'll take a shot with Van Rooyen in this group just because, I mean, I don't know what's going on with English. Berger's injured. I mean, maybe Todd is the play. I don't know. But Van Rooyen, to me, is a really talented player. This group is crazy. I think Van Rooyen is an okay punt play here, to be honest, just to get out of the pod.
Just to get out, yeah.
I think he's a really talented player. This guy's got, like, top 10s in majors and WGCs before. So I don't mind going to the bottom of the group in that one because we just don't know what's going on with the top two seeds there.
John Rahm, again, to me, Eric, is just an easy play. Him and Bryson, going to anchor a lot of my lineups.
Yeah, I find it hard to get away from him there. So that group three draw, I really like going to Rahm. I'm happy. It's also one of those feelings where it's like, if I lose with Rahm, I'll live with it. Like, I think going overweight to certain golfers with certain pedigrees is just kind of it's not just a safety net. It feels like, oh, I lost playing John Rahm. So what? Like, I obviously made a great choice. He's one of the top, I believe, five golfers in the entire world, and has been for multiple years. So I'm very happy to go that direction. Down at that 14 grouping, I'll let it be known, Daniel Berger, worst record out of anybody in the field, 1-8 in this event. So that's kind of strange because I would expect him to be much, much better than that.
Yeah, really weird group there. I want to do point out before we talk about the last quadrant that, in my opinion, and I want to get your guys' quick take on this as well, I find pricing to be extremely hard this week given the breakouts. I mean, I just put Rahm and DeChambeau in the same lineup, and I've got 7,100 left, and I'm looking, and I don't think anyone below 7,100 is going to win their pod. So, Jeff, let's talk about the last two groups, and why don't you mention about the salary breakout first?
Yeah, look, this is why we're trying to bring up guys at the bottom. You got to get aggressive this week. Like, you're going to have to take an Eric Van Rooyen. Like, it's not just me being like an idiot and being like, oh yeah, this guy's good. Like, someone's someone will like Van Rooyen, will win their group, and B, you're going to need to use them anyways. So we got to talk about these guys. You know, you're going to have to obviously pick on the right ones. Guys who've got, but make sure you're trying to pick guys who are live, and make sure, Jason, like you alluded to this morning, they're on the right side of the draw. Don't pick them to go up against your stud in the next round or something. So really pay attention to that. Just quickly, the last two groups. I kind of like Scheffler in that group six. Haven't really made a decision about group 11. Maybe a Poulter, but I definitely like Scheffler as kind of an under the radar. You'll save some money going off Xander too. So.
Group 11, I saw your message earlier in chat, Eric Cam Smith. I totally agree. Rory obviously is chasing distance, being hard. Let's talk about group six quickly. I think it's a really tough top three. Jason Day is actually playing good golf again. Scottie Scheffler definitely can get hot. And then Xander Schauffele not playing great. So do you see Jason Day getting out of there and obviously going up against his countrymate of Cameron Smith?
Yeah, I like Jason Day a lot. Just kind of, you know, somebody that obviously has a higher ball flight. And I think that kind of works as long as it's not super windy out there. There's a couple pins that you can get to. You have that drivable par four, just getting a little height on it to be able to get it closer there when you're coming down the stretch. I like Jason Day here a lot. Scottie Scheffler is somebody I play a lot, but I'm curious. I think the ownership might actually get there for him because he's a name that people like to click on. You have to get savings in some places. And because Xander hasn't been in the best form and has burned people of late, you might get some lower ownership on him for one of the top tier guys.
Certainly will. Well, that is going to do it. Our time is up here. I'm sorry that we didn't get to Corrales, but I assure you, we will be coming out with some Corrales content. I have my two short form videos coming up.
There's your Corrales content.
Yeah, yeah, and of course we've got plenty of time to do it. Match play locks on Wednesday, so we'll have a full day Wednesday at 10 a.m. afterwards to talk about it. Of course, jump in the Osmo Slack channel. Ben and I and Jeff and Eric will all be rolling through giving our opinions throughout the week. So until then, everybody, 2:30 tomorrow for the strategy show, and then again, a live before lock, 9 a.m. Wednesday. So that'll do it for us here on the PGA DFS First Look Show for the WGC Match Play. We will see you next week, everybody.